Bible to 1 Kings chapter 18. 1 Kings chapter 18. And I'm reading this evening the first 18 verses of that 18th chapter of 1 Kings. I find myself wishing that every person who is here this evening might have been present earlier in our earlier sessions of study, and especially the 17th chapter of 1 Kings, as we've begun to look into the life and the ministry of the prophet Elijah. We're coming to a transition point, a turning of a corner tonight, getting ready for the great critical showdown on the top of Mount Carmel that rechanneled the life of a nation back into the things of God, when that nation was adrift, morally defaulting, spiritually defective, and about ready to be destroyed, apparently, because of an invasion from the north, from the nation of Phoenicia in the person of Jezebel of Baal worship. And she married to the king of the northern kingdom of Israel, Ahab. She had introduced Baal worship into that northern kingdom, and the nation had turned in the direction of false gods, and a showdown was imperative if God were to be restored to his position of preeminence and importance and loyalty among the people. And so that showdown is just about upon us in our understanding and our study of the ministry and the life of Elijah. We're going to look at the transition point tonight when Elijah is redirected by God out into the public eye again, and the stage is being set for that great critical showdown on the top of Mount Carmel. I want to make a confession to you this evening as I approach this passage in 1 Kings chapter 18. For one of the few times where I really have any question about it, I don't know exactly how to interpret this passage. I'll just have to confess that to you. I'm going to wade in and tell you what is my recent conviction, with the possibility that I may not be right. And I'll just frankly tell you that and let you make your own decision. I'm going to present the truth as I see it and understand it, and then admit that there's a possibility that there's a whole other side to this that I have not approached in this message tonight, that is a very real possibility. Nobody has challenged me on it because I haven't presented. You may not even see the other side, but in the event that you do, I want you to know that you might be right. I'm presenting my own conviction, the way I see it and believe it at present. I do see that other side, but I want to share it with you the way I believe God has put it in my heart just now. 1 Kings chapter 18, verses 1 through 18. And it came to pass, after many days, that the word of the Lord came to Elijah in the third year, saying, Go, show thyself unto Ahab. Now you'll recall the earlier contrast when God said, Go and hide thyself. Shut yourself up and away from society, away from people. And I'm going to take care of you, culturing your spirit for the time of that showdown on Mount Carmel that would rescue a nation from the tenacious grip of idolatry and sin and evil and destruction. He says, Go, show thyself unto Ahab, and I will send rain upon the earth. And Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab. Now this is one of those multitudinous times in the life of Elijah where we see a repetition of simple, implicit obedience. His life is characterized by obedience, just childlike, implicit obedience, where he does not stop to ask questions. He does not stop to challenge God. He just does what God tells him to do. So it says, Elijah went to show himself unto Ahab, and there was a sore famine in Samaria. Now we cannot imagine what that means. In our more temperate climate, we can't imagine the horrors of an eastern drought. If you had seen a man with his tongue swollen and with great lines of cleavage in his tongue, if you'd seen a man with his lips parched and swollen and divided by cracks in the parched part of his lips, if you'd seen his tongue swollen out of his mouth, then you could have begun to appreciate an eastern drought, because this is the kind of thing among men that it produced. And there was a sore famine in Samaria, and Ahab called Obadiah, who was the governor of his house. Now the word governor here means steward or chamberlain. He's the head steward, the head trustee of the house of King Ahab. And Ahab called Obadiah, who was the governor of his house. Now Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. Now that's what introduces the problem. Here's a man who is identified with a pagan society, going along with pagan procedure up to a certain point at least. And yet the Bible says that Obadiah feared the Lord greatly. For it was so, when Jezebel cut off the prophets of the Lord, that Obadiah took 100 prophets and hid them by 50 in a cave and fed them with bread and water. Now that looks like a very worthy and noble enterprise. But the fact is that whereas he was sorry for them, he apparently did not stand with them. It never occurred to him that he belonged in the place of conviction and stand as well as they did, but he could not separate himself from the king's court. He was too comfortable though he was a believer in the living God. Verse 5, And Ahab said unto Obadiah, Go into the land, unto all fountains of water, and unto all brooks. Peradventure we may find grass to save the horses and mules alive, that we lose not all the beasts. Now let me remind you, in the event that you were not present earlier, that for 3.5 years it had not rained in Israel. At the beginning of this time, after 6 months of drought, Elijah had appeared on the scene and had told King Ahab in a bold and audacious way that for 3 more years it will not rain, neither will there be any dew to fall on the earth except at my word. And this had come to pass. And now the time had become so critical that there was not enough water even for the king's household and the parts of his household, the living parts of his household. And so he was sending out into all the land his chief chamberlain. He was going to divide the territory to go and look for grass in order that the beast might be preserved alive. Now there's much more here than meets the eye. His entire military fortification is at stake here. That the horses and mules may be saved alive, and we lose not all the beasts, and the very security of the nation apparently was at stake here. But there's even more than that. Many times when people are handled somewhat roughly by providential proceedings, they're not Christian people, they're not saved, we surmise in such words as this, well, surely that will reach them. Let's watch for them and pray for them at this point that God will be able to get through to them through this circumstance of their experience. And we wonder why this does not reach them many times. Well, friends, if this passage tells us anything, it tells us that neither afflictions, nor miracles, nor admonitions, nor temporal mercies, nor any other related thing is sufficient to restore those who are spiritually dead to life unless God is able to act in power and they receive the action of God. They can see miracles and remain unmoved. They can behold afflictions in them and in all the society about them and remain unmoved. They can see whatever. They can look into hell itself and remain unmoved unless the Spirit of God acts upon them. I remember when I was a boy, I heard preacher after preacher say, if the lid could just be taken off of hell and people could look in for 5 minutes, they would never again be the same. That's not true. It's not true for the simple reason that sin is not merely ignorance. Sin is revolt. It is rebellion, and you can show a man hell all you want to, and unless the Spirit of God acts upon him, he's going to remain just as spiritually dead as ever he was, because the one indispensable ingredient to new life is the Spirit of God. And if he does not act and is not permitted to do so, the person remains dead no matter what providential circumstances may prevail around him. Here was the entire nation dying, drying up, in dearth and drought and death. And King Ahab, who was primarily the governmental reason and responsibility behind this visitation of the judgment of God, he sees what is happening and he still does not turn to God. He gets his chief chamberlain and says, you go out into the land and look for water, look for grass. And verse 6 says, So they divided the land between them to pass throughout it. Ahab went one way by himself and Obadiah went another way by himself. Now let's register this fact. It's important to see that King Ahab went in person. And I think this is providential. He went to witness personally the misery that had been produced immediately by his own sin in allowing Baal worship through his own wife to be introduced into the land and allowing the people to succumb to that worship. Ahab went one way by himself,